That was a real difficult one for me to get my tongue around.
You got there in the end.
Hello and welcome to Clicked Off. Every week we'll be hearing from the people making it big in e-commerce. I'm your host, Jason Chappell.
Today I'm joined by Thomas Gleeson, the co-founder at Store Hero, a profit platform for D2C brands. Thomas, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks very much for having me on, Jason. Listen to the first couple of episodes of Clicked Off and I'll be really, really good. So hopefully I don't let the side down too much today.
Hey, look, I have that fear every time I hit record that I'm going to think, oh no, this one's going to be an absolute car crash.
They've all been great so far, so I'm sure this one will be okay too.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they've all been car crashes so far.
No, they have not.
People will vote with their feet, right? If they don't like it, fuck off.
Absolutely.
So look, I was really keen to get you on. You and I have been talking for a little while, and we quite often geek out on data around e-com. So I figured, why not bring that to everybody else? They can join us in geeking out. And really, I wanted to talk about Store Hero and where that started and your background as well. So
yeah,
maybe it's worth jumping into Store Hero first. What is it and how do people use it?
Great. Thanks very much. So Store Hero is what we're kind of terming as, I suppose, an e-com profit platform for e-commerce brands. So Store Hero enables you to really get a single source of truth to view all of your margins, unit economics, and your profitability, not just on an order level, but back to the product and generally at a business level as well. So we can enable you to hook into all of the core D2C platforms, your Facebook ads, Google ads, TikTok ads, Klaviyo for your email marketing. We enable you to see, to input all of your variable costs, so your shipping costs, 3PL costs, transaction fees, and then all of your operational expense data if you wish. So rent, staff costs, software fees, and so on and so forth. Again, to really give you that single source of truth that when you log in, you're not just getting your sales and your ROAS figures, but you're getting your true contribution margins, all of the core unit economics that every D2C owner would like to see on a daily, weekly, monthly basis, all the way down to what that net profit figure actually looks like.
See, and I think this is a key thing that, like, I definitely want to call out straight at the beginning, the profit piece. I think it often factors so low in people's thinking because they're blinded by lots of those other metrics, return on ad spend and conversion rates and all of these sorts of things. How do you help surface that to make it easy for brands to be able to see their profit?
Yeah, really good question. So I suppose just to touch on that a little bit before I even jump into how we help on it, it's probably a big problem that I see in the e-commerce industry as a whole, whereby, like you've just kind of alluded to, everybody's focused on revenue or ROAS. But a big core issue I see is they're all derivatives of straight revenue. And unfortunately, D2C today is quite a tight margin game, in that if you're focused on growing your top line sales, on your revenue, your average order value, again, they're all just derivatives of straight revenue. They're not taking into account what that margin actually looks like. So for instance, if you're a brand, are you trying to grow top line sales? Are you trying to grow your net profit? They're very, very different things. Your marketing strategy will have to be completely realigned depending on what your actual goals for the business are. So Store Hero, again, is really trying to focus and double down on true profitability for brands. So again, we're bringing in all of your sales data from your Shopify, from your Magento, your WooCommerce. But then we also bring in, as I said, all of that core marketing data. Your product costs obviously pull in from Shopify. But again, you can see all of your core 3PL fees, your transaction fees, your shipping costs, as opposed to your shipping sales. We might get into discounting in a minute and why I think that's important. But again, to really understand where your profitability lies at different levels of the P&L on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis.
Nice. I mean, you mentioned discounting there, and this is one of my favorite topics to talk about because I think it's a minefield. And I think there's so many mistakes that brands are making when it comes to discounting. Let's jump in. What are your thoughts around discounting?
I'm going to give a really marketer's answer here and say it depends, but it does. Look, I mean, there discounting can be extremely effective when used effectively, and to the opposite effect, it can be really detrimental to a business when not used effectively. And again, I suppose going back to that revenue orientation of the industry as a whole, just giving 10% off to drive sales, is that effective? Who knows? Like, is the person in charge of those discounts, are they going to be KPI'd on revenue, or are they going to be KPI'd on profit? That would really dictate how discounting really factors into the overall e-com strategy of the business. For instance, if they're going to be KPI'd on a, just say, for instance, they have an average order value of £100 and they want to make sure that that CPA is £40. That indicates about a 2.5 ROAS. Just make sure it's net revenue at the top there at the 100. Well, if we're really looking to just keep that CPA at £40 and that person then decides to give a 10% discount, getting the CPA of £40 now on £90 revenue means that the overall marketing efficiency of the business as a whole, and as you go to extrapolate that out over a week or month or even a year, that's going to have very, very different impacts on what the actual bottom line of the business looks like and how efficient your marketing actually looks like as a whole. So for instance, if you were looking to think about discounting, if you were going back to that same example of average order value being £100, CPA being 40, if you were then to apply a 10% discount to your average order value, bringing it back to 90, your CPA should also fall back in line. Now instead of achieving a CPA of £40, because you're factoring that discount in, you should probably be looking to achieve a CPA on £36, factoring in that 10% discount backwards as well. So again, I think that's where a lot of business owners can often fall down, is not actually understanding the true impact of that discounting on the business as a whole, and just using it as almost a cheap way to drive sales when in fact it's not actually that cheap a lot of the time. As I said, it can be used really, really effectively. When, okay, for instance, I might start with when it's not used effectively. So just we'll say, often we go onto websites today and we see 10, 15, 20% off to give your email. Like that's a massive portion of revenue to give up on a very first order. Often when we drill into this with brands, we ask them why they're doing that. Well, we say, well, we need to get emails, and you're dead right. You do need to get emails, but how much testing have you done on that pop-up to understand, is it like how elastic is the discount given to the actual the sign-up rate to your email? If you give a 20% discount, how many signups are you getting versus a 10% discount versus an email entrance to a competition or once a month? Those will all have very, very different impacts on how the business plays out over the long term, I suppose. So yeah, test that email pop-up, test the discount that you're willing to give away in order to get that email sign up day one. Often then again, you might see just blanket 20% off discounts going out to the full entire email list, irrespective of how loyal a customer might be. Again, you don't want to get your customers into a habit of just waiting for the sale. Because I mean, yeah, that can just happen time and time again. I've seen it so many times over the years that it can be, you know yourself, there's certain brands out there, I won't name any of them, but you might get 5-6 emails a day from one in particular that springs to mind, 20%, 30% off. And I mean, if I ever go onto that site, I have no intention of ever paying full price. And a lot of brands can fall into that trap where they're constant discounting to drive sales without really taking the margin implication into account can often be a death knell to the business in the long run. When can it be used effectively? For instance, if you know first purchase to second purchase is the highest drop off in terms of your customer journey, it might make sense to give a discount to first customers after the very first order in order to get them back a second time. Have a look at your data. Understand, for instance, if we have 100 customers, 20% of them come back, but then after the second order, they might come back 30% of the time, 40% of the time after the fourth order. Maybe it makes sense at that stage to give a discount, just trying to get that person back a second time and almost trying to create that purchase habit associated with your brand.
I think that's a really good point, because I think lots of brands treat their whole customer database exactly the same. And the reality is that they're so dissimilar. You know, you and I could be in the same database of customers, probably for that particular brand you're talking about. And You just wait for the discount. Actually, my other half was going to buy something the other week, and she went on the site and she added some things to her basket. I said, no, don't check out. Just wait. I said, I guarantee you, this was probably on a Thursday. I said, by Sunday, that I'm going to get text message with a discount code in it. What happens? Sunday morning, I wake up, there's a discount code sitting right there, and it's like 70% off or something. Yeah. So it's just like, you've conditioned me to not buy anything at full price. You know, I go on there and I'm like, okay, I wonder how much I'm going to pay for this week. But, you know, you don't need to give that to everybody. Like you're saying, if you can segment that database and work out which customers might need that little push to get them over the line, and what you're willing to do to do it, you know, in terms of a discount, you know, drop on your margin, then I think that's a really smart way to use discounting, you know. And I think as well, when you then compare that with an acquisition cost, so going out there and finding a fresh customer, how much are we prepared to spend on doing that? And maybe apply some of those same budgeting rules to people who you want to get from a first to a second purchase.
Oh, absolutely. I saw one clever one with one of our clients recently. So the average order value is again about £100. And instead of giving the 15-20% off that they were doing, which on £100 average order value, we'll just say £15, 15% discount, indicating a 15% discount, they decided to give a free gift with first purchase. And the cost of the item was about £7 or £8, retailed for about 30. So for instance, the customer then perceived that they were getting a much better bargain, but the business was getting a better deal as well. So there are ways to discount that you can do it a lot cleverly and often make the customer feel like they're getting more, and they are getting more, but it's actually better on a net level for the business as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point, because a lot of us, as a customer and a consumer, you look at that retail price, right? But obviously there's a margin built into that for that business. You know, and if you can make it a win-win, then everybody's happy. You know, I think that's a super smart way to go and look at some of those things. Now, building on that, you touched on somebody doing something pretty smart then. You've probably seen some not so smart things that people are doing. I mean, maybe we should talk about your background, Thomas, because you've come into this. It's not like you just had an idea one day and thought you'd do this. You've got pedigree. You've got a background. Where were you before? You were at Shopify before.
Yeah, it's a long story, and I might just give the context on it, because I think it's very emblematic, I suppose, of why we built this product today. It's really come from a lived problem of not understanding our margins, and I suppose realizing the impact when we actually solved this, the effect it had on the business. So what am I talking about? So yeah, as your listeners can probably hear, I'm from Ireland. I've grown up with e-commerce. My mother has had an e-commerce business for 20 years at this stage. She set it up in 2004.
She must have got in early.
Yeah, very early. Very early. I mean, yeah, when I think back to some of the stuff she would have had to do back in the day to get online and to even just figure stuff out. I mean, Shopify wasn't even born as a company at this stage. The support that we would have got from original channels back then, the e-commerce platforms we were using, when I compare it to what's available today, I mean, the e-commerce resources we have on YouTube and DTC Twitter and LinkedIn, like, they didn't exist. So getting online back then was a hell of a lot more difficult than it is today. So
Having to unplug phones at that point to plug the internet in? Is that how for everybody who's really young, they're not going to have a clue what we're talking about. But for everybody who's got as many wrinkles as I have on my forehead, they're going to remember unplugging that phone line and being told, hurry up, you know, I need to phone so-and-so.
Yeah, I can remember that. And even just on the house phone as well, like, I mean, our family phone number, our house phone, was on her website. So if you didn't want to place the order online, now we're going back to 2004, a lot of people still had this perception that every online website was a scam. So our house phone was on the website, and we were all, like myself, my brother and my sister, we were all trained how to take the orders over the phone. So we'd know what was on the website, and we'd have to, it was personalized gifts we sold. So we have to make sure everything was spelled correctly. We had the address down correctly and the payment was processed correctly. So yeah, that was like playing a PlayStation 1 in terms of e-commerce compared to what we have today. But yeah, where was I going with that? So that's the house I grew up in, I suppose. Instead of hoovering our rooms or cleaning the house, we were doing a lot of SEO on Mam's website or unloading shipping containers. So we were literally just born into e-commerce. I had a couple of small e-commerce brands myself as a teenager and into my early 20s. Again, doing loads of different kinds of businesses, all on Shopify at the time. Around 2019, I saw a job come up. I actually migrated Mam's business from another e-commerce platform over to Shopify. So I was pretty in the weeds with it for a couple of months doing the migration. Finished it and then saw a job actually come up in Shopify. And I thought, you know what? I really want to learn a lot more about e-commerce and what better way to do it than actually to go and work at Shopify. So I started there in probably, I think it was July 2019. So started off in customer support. Really, really interesting job. So how do I add a product? What is a Facebook pixel? Why is my checkout broken? What's going on here? So again, you got to see the ins and outs, the problems, the pains of business owners literally all over the world. Did that for about a year, moved into Shopify Plus support, similar problems, much bigger numbers. And after about another 6 months, I moved into what was kind of a merchant success manager role. So I was essentially working with brands in the UK, advising on marketing and general e-commerce strategy and overall Shopify roadmap. So really, such an interesting job, Jason. I mean, you were at the forefront of some of the most exciting brands in the UK, really getting to hear about what these guys are worried about, what they were concerned about, where the opportunities were, how they got to think about different things. I mean, we were there all during the Suez Canal issue with supply chain stopped. Then iOS 14 happened. Everyone's marketing strategy had to completely change. So watching how these guys dealt with change, I found extremely interesting. I learned so much from it. But I suppose that was Shopify, incredible experience. During my time at Shopify, what I was actually trying to do for my family business was, like, I suppose during the support period, I started talking to a lot of business owners who were data driven. And I suppose that's going back 4 years, but it's probably even not as prevalent as the term as it is today. So I kind of thought, you know what, I need to start understanding our own family business a hell of a lot more, because we didn't run a paid ad till 2016 because it was all built on SEO. Which sounds like a fairy tale to everybody spending on Google and Facebook today, but you know, that's how it was. So we started spending online, started working, not massive numbers or anything like that, but it did start working. But I suppose it was a lot of gut feeling. And I thought, you know what, I need to actually have a handle and understand how are we incrementally growing things, what's working, what's not working, that kind of thing. So on a Monday evening, what I used to do is actually just basically pull in all of the core Shopify metrics. So sales, conversion rates, average order value, new customer, repeat customer rate, all that kind of thing. Then also pull in the core Google Analytics metrics, page views, bounce rates, all of the Google ads, Facebook ads, Klaviyo metrics. And then also try and pull in the operational expenses of the business to really understand how profitable or unprofitable the business was.
Mm-hmm.
That was great, really painfully manual, but I actually enjoyed doing it. We're both e-com nerds, Jason, so I'm sure you understand where I was coming from.
Hey, look, I like getting my hands dirty as much as the next man, but yeah, I do like a bit of automation as well.
I know. Yeah, in retrospect, I would have liked that too. But, you know, like, I suppose over COVID, like a lot of e-com businesses, we saw really, really good growth, and that manifested itself, I suppose, in higher ROAS. I started seeing our ROAS shoot up, and I was basically saying to my parents that ROAS is really good. We need to increase the ad spend. Now, the problem I ran into was that my dad is an accountant, and accountants by their nature are often apprehensive, to put it mildly, on marketing and its true effect on the business. So I can remember saying to him one day, I was like, Dad, like, the ROAS is really, really good here. And he turned around. I won't repeat exactly what he said, but it was something along the lines of, what is ROAS? Insert your favorite word. And yeah, I suppose what that forced me to do was understand, okay, what is the break-even point ROAS on a product level? What's the break-even point ROAS on a business level? When we really dug into it in the UK and in Europe, we have this weird VAT issue whereby you spend one, you generate five, but you actually need to strip your VAT back out of that five. It's not true as it would be in the States. I wasn't aware of that 4 years ago. I am now, but there's still an awful lot of business owners that out there that are operating without that true visibility and understanding of how that's actually impacting their bottom line. When I got there, it probably highlighted a couple of issues to me, to be honest with you. One, the main one being that, and I saw it at home, but I also saw it at Shopify as well, with some businesses that were pretty large, whereby the founders and the operators of the business were really taking their financial advice from their bookkeeper or their accountant. But a lot of the time, that person is John or Tom up the road, or Mary down the road, or whoever it is. And they're dealing with this business along with maybe 10 or 15 other businesses who largely are not e-commerce businesses. And so the founder was really taking their advice from somebody who doesn't really understand their business. Like, e-commerce is often predicated on marketing metrics. You've conversion rates, average order values, ROAS, all this kind of thing. And it's like reading double Dutch to a lot of accountants. They just want to see the P&L at the end of the month. They might say your marketing spend is too high, but without really a fundamental understanding of what the underlying unit economics that have led to that P&L actually looked like. Like, in our instance, marketing did look too high, but it was because we actually weren't spending enough. And that's really counterintuitive to explain to a bookkeeper and accountant. So what we tried to do, I suppose, with the platform was to make sure that the profitability, the margins, and the unit economics were really, really just clear and easy to understand. So I suppose for the first time, the marketer can speak an element of finance without needing to be an accountant. And on the flip side of that, the accountant can pretty easily log in, see their real-time P&L, but then they also have full visibility into the marketing metrics well explained that have actually contributed to making up that P&L. I think having some kind of financial literacy fused with your marketing is a superpower in e-commerce today. So we're really just trying to empower that for as many brands as possible.
Now, you mentioned in there, and I really want to double down on this because I think it's super important for everybody, whether you're a brand, whether you're a marketer, whether you're an agency, to understand that return on ad spend piece that you mentioned in regards to VAT. Mm. Because I don't want to just kind of gloss over that, because I think there's like 20 odd percent of somebody's revenue that they are counting at the moment that is going to get stripped from them by the lovely HMRC or whoever your tax liability lies with. Do you want to talk to us about that a little bit more?
Yeah, 100%. Again, this was kind of really eye-opening for me when I probably initially saw it first a couple of years ago. And definitely, my dad was kind of like, I told you so. It is a load of... Anyway, yeah. So really, really interesting. So like, just to break down that VAT implication on your ROAS. So for instance, if you spend £10 and you sell a product for £50, you think your ROAS is 5. Facebook will tell you it is. Unfortunately, it's not. What do I mean by that? So for instance, the £10 you've spent is ex VAT, but the £50 you've generated is fully inclusive of VAT. So the £10 you've spent on Facebook, if Facebook were just to bill you for that £10 alone, the bill you'll get is £12 because they're going to add on your 20% VAT on top of it. But the £50 that you've sold through Shopify is fully inclusive of VAT. So we actually need to take 20% off that. So you've really spent £10 ex VAT and generated £40 ex VAT. So the 5 ROAS you thought you had is actually a 4 ROAS. I mean, iOS 14 hit and obviously ads got more expensive. Everybody was really worried about attribution, but I don't see enough people really talking about this specific piece enough. Not that it's ever changed, but it is something that flies under the radar for a lot of brands that I've just seen time and time again that they're not fully aware of. First of all, that exists, and that obviously 20% efficiency on your marketing spend is massive. Mm-hmm. Not being aware of this will mean that you're completely overestimating how efficient your marketing spend is, and as a result, your business.
Well, not only that, you have that floating 20% that's sitting on top of your bill from Facebook. Yes, okay, you can reclaim that, but that's a cash flow problem waiting to happen, right? That so many brands think they've made £40 net effectively. And the reality is they've made 30, and then they're going to have to lose £2 as well that are going to get mixed up in cash flow. So, you know, you've gone from saying, oh, we've got £50 come in. The reality is you've got 28 to play with you know, and some of the rest of that is then floating around in your VAT calculations with HMRC and that side of things. So I don't hear people talking about this either, because I think people take that return on ad spend, that ROAS number at face value and just accept that that's what it is. And I think, sadly, there's probably a lot of agencies out there that rely on that lack of knowledge, that people say, okay, fine, and then they're going to charge a percentage. You know, some of those agencies will charge a percentage on spend. So they're always asking you to increase your spend. And if you're seeing that ROAS drop, you know, consistently, at what point does it become a negative, you know, for your brand? I'm guessing this is where Store Hero can jump in and help. They give people visibility on exactly that, on that break-even point that's there.
Yeah, I mean, just to go back to, I suppose, our own example at home, like over COVID, we were generating over a 10 ROAS. I mean, it was ridiculous, really. After iOS 14 and as shops started to reopen, that went down to about 5, I think it was. Initially, my dad's reaction was, okay, our ROAS is halved. Marketing is just about half as efficient as it was. You've asked us to increase spend. There's no way this is profitable anymore. It can't be. But the problem was it can't be. There was no data really backing that up. So again, that's where I had to really drill in and understand what, I suppose, the VAT implication was, the product cost implication, factoring in the transaction fee, shipping costs, fulfillment costs that we would have had to do to fulfill that product. So we've actually brought that into Store Hero directly. So within the products page, it almost defaults to a product by sales report. So you can look at yesterday, see the products that sold the most. And then what we've actually done is almost taken a unit economics approach on a product level. So what do I mean by that? So assuming a single product order, so that jumper that you've sold for £50, it's going to strip out the VAT. It's going to strip out your product costs. It's going to strip out your shipping costs, your transaction fee, and your fulfillment fee if you have those incorporated into the platform, and actually give you a break-even point ROAS on a product level all the way through. So every single product, you actually start understanding where that break-even point ROAS actually looks like. Like, to be honest, obviously ads have got inherently much more expensive over the last year, and there's a lot of brands that are overspending on ads. But from what I've seen over the last 9 months, there's actually more brands underspending. And when you really get into the nuts and bolts of it, they're underspending because they're not really clear on this. They're underspending because their ad spend it's almost knee-jerk reactions to how today's business is going. And we're not generating much sales today. We need to pull back on ad spend. Wherein the business isn't generating a profit because you're not, now this isn't the case for everyone, but for a lot of businesses, you're not driving enough volume to cover all of the other operation expenses that actually need to take place as well. So it's been a big unlock for a lot of the brands that we're working with, just to get that line by line break-even point ROAS.
And I'm guessing that the people are going to get more and more from the software the more they put in up front. You know, so if people are putting effort in and putting all of their unit economics in, so, you know, the cost of each of those goods line by line, you know, their shipping fees line by line, and then being able to calculate and attribute the various variable costs to each of those, they're going to get way more from it than if they just chucked it into their store and then hoped that it was going to be the silver bullet that gave them all the answers. You've got to feed it something, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I suppose this is some of the missing picture that I personally would have seen that I wasn't getting from our e-com platform when I was filling out that spreadsheet. Again, going back to the discounting piece, I suppose free shipping is one discount that we see in every store today. Spend X, get free shipping. But the way Shopify is set up, that if, for instance, it spends £70, get free shipping, that's set up as a setting. It's not set up as a discount, and therefore you can't actually pull any reports to understand what the margin implication on the business is of that free shipping threshold. It just shows shipping paid zero. So for instance, in Store Hero, you can pop in what your default shipping cost is on a country level. So for instance, if you're going to ship to the UK, it could be £5. But if you're going to Ireland, it could be 10. If you're going to the US, it could be 15. So irrespective of whether the customer is actually paid for shipping or not, that shipping cost will fully pull into the platform, onto the real-time P&L, but also down to the order level as well. We also have your base pick pack cost fees for your fulfillment center and your transactional fees as well. So along with the products page, there is a really good orders page as well. So you can see your true gross profit on an order level. So for instance, the customer has paid for £50. After we strip out the VAT, it could be £10 stripped out. We've also then decided to give them a 20% discount, strip out another 10. We need to factor in our product costs. They've got free shipping. We need to make sure that's factored in. Your 3PL costs. So actually understanding the gross profit on an order level is incredibly important. And I often hear from people initially, until they actually get to use it, is like, I have hundreds of thousands of orders going through here a month. Like, I don't need to see this. And you don't need to see every order, but actually filtering at the end of every week or every month, okay, what are the top 10 gross margin orders and what are the bottom 10 gross margin or often loss making orders, and understanding like, what's the genetic makeup of those orders? Like, why are those orders really profitable? Usually most business owners would probably be able to tell you what the most profitable orders are because they're the ones they really want to look at their Shopify app every day. But we're probably actually seeing more of an implication for businesses as a whole in understanding the unprofitable orders and why is an order unprofitable or really low margin making. Well, it could be that you've given that big discount. It could be that you have given the free shipping threshold. You might just have poor margins on the product to begin with. You might have, if it's going to Germany, you mightn't have priced your shipping settings up to Germany correctly, and you could be paying a lot more than you actually might have initially thought. Obviously, we want to maximize the really profitable orders as much as possible, but actually understanding what the really unprofitable orders looks like and trying to almost mitigate and dial your e-com strategy towards mitigating against those as much as possible will have an even more bigger impact, I suppose, on the business as a whole. Just with the nature of e-commerce at the moment, it's really difficult to actually understand your profitability on an order level, but it's really key to driving a profitable business today.
I think that's a really good point, because I think there's an element of discomfort that people have had to get used to because of privacy updates from iOS 14, and there are more coming. There's an element of discomfort that you're not going to be able to attribute every sale or every last penny. And then you have over attribution where everybody's, you've got paid ads that are claiming the sale. You've got email marketing that are claiming the sale. You've got SEO, or direct that are going to claim the sale. I mean, I think loads of brands and loads of merchants would be really happy if they actually brought in all of that aggregated revenue that everybody was claiming. They'd probably double their profits. But the reality is that there's overlap between those, right? And it's very, very difficult to nail down exactly who's responsible. And it's probably a mixture, a blend of all of them, right? Because people don't typically convert. They see one ad on Facebook or in their Instagram account. They don't see one ad and buy it. And then all of a sudden, they're a lifelong customer and they're buying. The reality of that is they're probably 0.1% of, there's probably even less than that, of consumers. Most of them are going to see 4, 5, 6, 7 touch points at least. And that's going to be, they've seen an ad, they've been on the site, they've signed up, for their obligatory 10% discount that nobody knows if it's working or not. So they've then got their email, they've received an email from the brand, they've been and had a look, they've then got a retargeting ad from somewhere else. Then they've just searched on it because something came up and they realized, oh, actually, they do want to buy that product. You've got an attribution nightmare from that standpoint. But being able to understand all of your costs associated, within that and being able to pull that together is where the difficulty lies for so many brands. And this for me, we've talked about Store Hero for quite some time. This is where this sort of product is winning out for me, in terms of it being that one source of truth for so much of somebody's data, because it's overwhelming the amount that people have, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's it's really difficult. I mean, running an e-commerce business today is not easy. But I suppose on the flip side of that, there's two ways to make decisions, really. One is through your understanding and your gut feel about something. That's often the harder decision to make because it often requires a hell of a lot of thinking. If you can have your data structured in a way that just makes the decisions a lot easier, that's often a better way to make decisions and a hell of a lot quicker and a lot easier. And you often have a lot more confidence and clarity, I suppose, as to where the business is going. If it's working, what levers do I need to pull in order to drive profitable growth? So that's point one, I suppose. You touched on a couple of interesting points there on attribution, and we often get compared to some of those tools just because we have those integrations with Facebook and Google and so on and so forth. We're not touching the attribution side of the coin. And the reason for that is we're really trying to double down on, I suppose, the contribution margin as a whole, which is your revenue, your net sales minus your total cost of goods, factoring in your product costs, shipping costs, transaction fees, fulfillment costs, minus your total marketing spend. So we want to get laser focused on contribution margin and on your marketing efficiency ratio, or your MER. People might have seen that figure kind of thrown around online. So what's MER? So it's your net sales divided by your total marketing spend. So we're not taking any hindrance here from Facebook or Google in terms of what they're attributing to ROAS. We're literally just saying, almost old school, your net sales divided by total marketing spend. How efficient is my marketing spend as a whole? Just to be clear on that as well, you can see your Facebook and Google ads within the platform, but again, you're going off channel attributed ROAS there. And we want to get people into the mindset of really just understanding what that contribution margin looks like and their MER as a whole.
And this for you, and I'm of very similar thinking, is like the most important thing that people can be looking at right now. Out of that whole trying to drink from a fire hydrant of data, these are the metrics that you think people should be looking at right now.
100%, 100%. Just again, I suppose, to reiterate, that contribution margin figure is, I suppose it's one that we're really starting to see come to life industry-wide over the past year to 18 months. As attribution gets murkier and murkier for businesses across the board, businesses are consistently trying to scale their spend, but often it becomes difficult to understand, are you actually driving incremental profits or incremental effective growth? In that, if you're going to spend 10,000, you're trying to up that then to 15. Is that extra 5K going from 10 to 15? Is that driving incremental profitable growth, or is it just driving a bit of growth but actually costing you money? Trying to find where that actual point is can be quite difficult for brands, and that's where your contribution margin really comes in to understand what your true profit after your marketing is, but before your operating expenses. Like for a lot of businesses, your operating expenses are going to be pretty similar each month. Your warehouse or your rent is going to be largely the same. Your software costs are going to be largely the same. Depending on how you fulfill your orders, that might ramp up a little bit coming into Q4 as you get a little bit busier. But by and large, your operating expenses are going to be quite similar each month. So trying to find your profit before your operating expenses, and how do we look to grow that? How can we increase that number throughout the year? And if we can keep increasing that number and our operational expenses actually remain the same, we're just going to have a much more profitable business really at the end of the day.
I think that's a really key point, because if you're a service-based business, it's really easy for you to look at that, because you say, okay, fine, we've got, you know, X amount of work coming in. We need to recruit one more person, two more people, whatever that looks like. And you can see that, you know, those fixed costs every single month, you know, will increase. And, you know, as a result of adding that bum to that seat, you're going to get another 37 and a half, 40 hours of available hours that you can sell, you know, to your customers. That's really simple maths. But when it comes to product-based businesses, it becomes a little bit more challenging, right? Because those two numbers don't follow one another perfectly. You can add an awful lot more product before you have to scale some of those fixed costs. On the flip side, those fixed costs are there regardless of whether you sell one thing or 1,000 things. You know, but where is that tipping point where you're going to have to start to look at some of those? I think it's really important.
Absolutely. And I mean, contribution margin probably leads into, like, really understanding every line, any of the main lines of the P&L, I suppose, in relation to a percentage of net sales. So what does your marketing as a percentage of net sales looks like? What does your staff costs as a percentage or general operational expenses as a percentage of net sales look like? And just, I suppose, the best brand that we have been working with this year, they've seen sales increase by, 38%? That mightn't sound fantastic. Great, though. What have they done? What's been the mechanism to drive that, I suppose? They've actually increased their ad spend by 170%. Now, people are probably listening to this and say, okay, sales have gone up by 37%, 38%. Ad spend gone up by 170%. That doesn't sound great. But the problem that business actually had last year was that they didn't have their numbers. It was a lot of gut feel. And typically, they had a slow, like the business was very Q4 heavy. And they were kind of break even, making a small bit of profit from like January to September. But what we actually decided to do, they come on board with us, I think it was in end of January, March, sorry, February time. We could see that the underlying unit economics were good, but the business owner had been trained by their previous agency to be constantly trying to increase the ROAS. So they had like a 7 or 8 ROAS, but they weren't spending enough. So we've actually, I think we've increased our ad spend this year. By the way, we're not an ads agency. We're not running their ads. We're just giving them advice on what they should be doing and how to understand this piece. They've increased their ad spend by 170% this year. And that MER piece, or that ROAS piece, it's gone down by, I think, 41%. So they were always chasing this really high ROAS, but in the long term, it was actually costing them a hell of a lot of money. So sales went up by 38%. Ad spend went up by 170%. But that contribution margin went up by, I think, 30%. So the profit that they had, even though they increased the ad spend massively, the profit that they still had at the end of the day after their ad spend went up by 30%. And as a result, the net profits of the business are up over 120% year to date. And we haven't even come into busy time yet. So completely transformed the business. But again, that person, that business, it's an SMB below, I think, 2 million a year. Increasing that ad spend, if you're not fully dialed in on the implications from a profitability perspective, it's terrifying. I mean, your ad spend has just got much more expensive over the last number of years, that a lot of business owners are starting to retrench on that because it's scary to look at. And if you're running an e-com business today, you just need to make sure that you are looking at everything from a margin perspective instead of a revenue perspective, because again, going back to the point, it's not a massive margin game. Your margins need to be fully dialed in, and just making sure that you understand those numbers is imperative.
Hey, look, I talk to all my clients about profit, and profit always needs a seat at the table. We can talk about revenue, we can talk about, you know, big numbers and conversion rates and all those things, but does it matter if you're not profitable? And for me, that's always the kind of first port of call, making sure that people are there. Now, you have got some pretty big stuff going on your side. Am I right in thinking you've got a report coming out soon, haven't you, that people can get their hands on?
Yeah, we're just about to launch, probably be, I think, in 2 weeks' time, middle of September. We're launching a big ebook on getting your business ready for Black Friday from a profitability perspective. So kind of rehashing, I suppose, a lot of what we're after going through in the podcast there. If you're not familiar with this kind of line of thinking, particularly as it pertains to that weird intersection between finance and marketing from an e-commerce perspective, we're going to go really, really deep on that ebook. It's going to be free for everyone. And we've got some big names contributing, including yourself, Jason, into the book. So really looking forward to getting that out and getting it in people's hands and hoping they can use it effectively as both of as we've been able to get people to improve and understand their own businesses as we approach Q4.
I'll put a link to where people can get hold of it in the show notes. But where else can people get hold of you, Thomas?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, Thomas Gleason. And then on our website is storyhero.ai, and you can get us there as well.
Perfect. Well, look, thank you so much for joining me today. I could have geeked out for way longer, but I'll spare people. Maybe what we'll do is we'll have you on for a second round, and then we can get deep and everybody will be forewarned, and we'll see who's really into their data if and when you come back.
No problem at all. No problem at all. Thanks very, very much for having me on, Jason. Really appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, Thomas.
Cheers.